We saw Kashi yesterday. Rashi filled us in. We're trying to understand the word la'achoisei. And if you remember, every word in the Pasuk was used for a drosha. In fact, every word was used to be matir, a nozir, to become tummy for a mace mitzvah. Now, why would you need four psukim teaching me the same thing? And the answer is because each one in progression was teaching me a bigger chiddush. Remember, let's recap, otherwise we will not follow the sugya. A nozir may not become tummy, similar to a kohen. And the Torah writes, al kol nefesh mace, any dead person, he may not become tummy for. With the big question being, if that's the case, why does the Torah follow that up by saying la'oviv, le'imoy, etc., etc., la'ochiv, la'choisa, he cannot become tummy for? The Torah has already stated that he cannot become tummy for anybody. So why is the Torah then detailing various members of the family? Surely they are included anyway. And the answer must be that each word is trying to teach us a different chiddush. Yes, he cannot become tummy if his father passes away, but there's somebody else that he can. And who's that somebody else? The mace mitzvah. Then you move on to le'imoy. He cannot become tummy for his mother. We know that already. Yes, but the implication, that's the chiddush. There's somebody else that he can become tummy. Now, who's that? Don't tell me the mace mitzvah. I know that already. So the Rashi explained, and this is all in the Sifri, we're talking about if he's a nozir, but also a kohen. If he's a nozir and also a kohen, so now he has two kedushas. So I would not necessarily have known that he may become tummy for a mace mitzvah. Because until this point, I've only been taught that a regular nozir, who's not a kohen, can become tummy for a mace mitzvah. But maybe when he's got a double kedusha, that would be different. That's why the word le'imoy is here to teach me that no, once again, even though he's a nozir and a kohen gadol and a kohen, he may nonetheless become tummy for a mace mitzvah. Now we move on to the third word, le'ochiv. What's that doing there? He cannot become tummy for his brother. I know that. Don't tell me mace mitzvah. I know that too. Don't tell me kohen who's a nozir. I know that too. The answer is kohen gadol who's a nozir. Not only is there a double kedusha, but it's a super kedusha because he's a kohen gadol. So even though he's got every reason in the world not to become tummy, he's a kohen, and not just any kohen, he's a kohen gadol. Together with the fact that he's a nozir, nonetheless, he may become tummy for a mace mitzvah. Those are the first three words in the pasuk. And then we arrive at the word that is relevant to us, la'achoisei. Now, surely there is nothing left to darshan. Every possible permutation concerning mace mitzvah has been discussed. A nozir who's a kohen, a nozir who's a kohen gadol. You can't become more kodesh than that. So surely there cannot be another case of mace mitzvah that needs to be discussed. This is where the brisa begins. So let's see once again the brisa. It's the bottom of Yud Tes on a base. Toshema. V'la'achoysoi ma talmud lo'ima. Now can you imagine what would we have done without Rashi? We'd have no idea what the brisa is talking about. Rashi has given us all the groundwork. There are three words prior to la'achoysoi which have all been used for drushes. So what do we learn from the la'achoysoi? The answer is, Hare shahaya shaylech lishchetes pischoi. If somebody is on his way to shech the korban Pesach, or velomel es benoi, or to circumcise his son, remember, those are mitzvahs asei, with a common denominator being very rare, failure to keep them means you are chayev kores. So they are the most severe of severe mitzvahs asei in the whole Torah. The shaman on the way, Shomash Ameis Loi Meis, he heard that one of his relatives had tragically passed away. Yachol, I would have thought that Yachzor VeYitma, I would have thought that he should go back and become Tomei and deal with them, even at the expense of missing out on Korban Pesach, or even at the expense of pushing off the bris milah of his son, let's say, for another day. That's why, Omrat, we say, loy yitame, quote, unquote. No, he may not become Tomei. He first has to deal with the Korban Pesach and the bris milah, and then he will attend to the needs of the dead relative. Yochel continues the Braisa, if that's the case, Kashem She'ene Metame Lohem, comma. So I would have thought, in the same way as he cannot become Tomei for his relatives, because the Korban Pesach and Bris Milah is waiting, Kach Einoi Metame L'Meis Mitzvah, perhaps he also cannot become Tomei for a Meis Mitzvah. Why? Because Korban Pesach and Bris Milah seem to be so overwhelmingly important, and it even knocks out tending to the needs of his dead relative. So maybe it knocks out tending to the needs of a Meis Mitzvah. Talmud Loima Ula Achoisoi, quote unquote. Bottom line of the Gemara, La Achoisoi Hu De Einoi Metame. It is only for a sister one cannot become Tomei for, with the implication being, Avol Metamehu Lemeis Mitzvah. But he can become Tomei for a Meis Mitzvah, meaning even though he's on his way to shechting a Korban Pesach or doing a Bris Milah. Now, before we continue with the Kasha of the Gemara, Rav Nachum.
We're learning this Bryson now, according to Rashi, so we don't know if this is a regular person or a Kohen Gadol / Nazir.
Quite right. This is what we wanted to point out. Before we continue and get stuck once again into Kavod HaBrios, which is really our sugya, we have to make a very, very important point over here. And that is, if you look at Rashi, you will see Rashi gives us a little bit of a remez to what Rav Nachum just brought up. Meaning, let's not forget where this word v'la'achoyso is written. It's not just written out the blue. It's in the context of the parasha of Nozir. So every word we have used in the pasuk thus far has always, understandably, being a drasha within the confines of Nozir. A Nozir becoming Tomei to a Meis Mitzvah. A Nozir who's a Kohen. A Nozir who's a Kohen Gadol. Those were the first three words, and then we hit a brick wall. What are we going to do now for Vela Achoisei? Surely we've exhausted every single option with regard to Nozir. So what's the answer? It's talking about Bris Milah and Pesach. One second. Have we left Nozir now? We cannot forget that V'la Achoisoi is written in the parasha of Nozir. Now we will soon see, hopefully today, that Tosfos learns that we are still very firmly rooted in the parasha of Nozir. We have managed to discover another case of Nozir. We thought there surely cannot be any more cases of Nozir. Nozir Kohen, Nozir Kohen Gadol, what's left? The answer is a Nozir who is on the way to doing his Pesach or Milah. So we are still remaining in the parasha of Nozir.
The fact that this has been a progression, couldn't we say that the case is a Nozir who's a Kohen Gadol,
right,
who's on his way to do, that's sure, the most biggest kiddush of all.
Yeah, that's what Tosfos does say. So it means it's a very neat progression with each word on the pasuk building upon the previous one. So initially it was a regular Nozir, then it was a Nozir who was a Kohen, then a Nozir who was a Kohen Gadol, and the neatest way of continuing would l'chayra be a Nozir who's a Kohen. Godoil, all three options, who's also on his way to doing Pesach or Milah. Now, it's a little bit of an interesting jump, though. Nazir and Kohen Gadol are all degrees of Kedusha. So we understand the progression. The more Kodosh you are, the bigger the Chiddush that you are allowed to be metame for a Meis Mitzvah. The fact that you're on your way to doing a bris or milah doesn't make you more Kodosh. So why is this nonetheless considered a bigger Chiddush? And the answer is, it's two factors combined. Number one, you have the super Kedusha, because you are a Nozir, who's a Kohen Godoil, allied with the fact that you have something else that you're going to lose out on. And what's that? These mitzvahs of Pesach or Milah, which are Chayvei Krisus. If you tell me that he should nonetheless tend to the Meis Mitzvah, look what you are compromising on. You are compromising not only on his super-duper Kedusha, but also on these mitzvahs asei sheyesh boi kores. So that really is the biggest chiddush of the lot. That is how Tosfos learns the word achosei. Now look at Rashi, and let's try and work out, and this, Reb Nachum, you were pointing out, does Rashi learn the same, or Rashi not learn the same? So look at Rashi. On the fourth or fifth bottom line, v'shama shemes laimes, meaning mikroivov, comma. One of his seven relatives is Yochel, I would have thought, yitame lohem, he may become tome to deal with them. Omrat, no, loy yitame. Why not? Hoyil v'oinas. What does v'oinas mean? Oinas means it's the period. Because this is the period of Shechitas HaPesach, this is the time. This is the time of Shechitas HaPesach. Remember, Shechitas HaPesach cannot be performed at any time. You cannot say, if I don't do it today, I'll do it tomorrow. We're not getting involved now in discussions of Pesach Sheni. But Pesach can only be shechted, for purposes of our discussion, on Yud Dalad Nisan. Yud Dalad Nisan, that's the only day. And if you go and attend to these, the needs of your relative, you will miss out the Korban Pesach. Hoyil v'oinas shchitas ha-pesach hi koma, because this is the time of shchitas ha-pesach. V'chala olav, what does v'chala mean? And it takes effect on him. Choyvas ha-pesach. Shehu Bekores, two key words Rashi points out. That's what's so unique about this mitzvah of Pesach, because it is Bekores, is im yitmo, if he becomes Tomei, yevatel milasois Pesach. He will be mevatel korban Pesach, which is considered very severe. V'lomoles benoi, nami mitzvahs karesi. That's why they're both mentioned in the same breath, because doing milah for his son is also an issue of krisus. So the way Rashi has said it so far is, it's one of two cases, either Pesach or milah, the common denominator being they are both chayvei krisus. Says Rashi, the is da omri, some explain that ba'arvei psochim, nami ka'omar, the milas zechorov ma'akev ha-pesach. There is a halacha, I don't want to launch into a whole discussion now, but if somebody has a child who is uncircumcised, that means, this is next week's parash and parashas boy, that the father cannot be ma'akev ha-korban pesach. We know somebody who himself is an oral, has not had bris milah, cannot be makrib korban pesach. So too, if you have a child who's chayev b'milah and you have not circumcised him, you cannot be makrib korban pesach either. So some learn that when it says in our Gemara, he's on his way to shechting a pesach v'lo moles benoi, it's really the same case. if he doesn't circumcise his son, then he will not be able to be makir of the Korban Pesach. So ultimately, it's Korban Pesach and Kores at stake. Now, look at the end of the previous Rashi, which we missed out yesterday, but now we can see it. Look at Rashi. In my print, it's the last word on the second wide line. V'la'achoyse. You have that, Rashi?
Yep.
It's the end of the previous Rashi. It's a long Rashi. Rashi says, V'la'achoyse ma Talmud loy ma? Question mark. So what is achoyse teaching me? Now look very carefully at how Rashi explains the answer of the Gemara. Im einoi inyan leze, tenehu inyan lemisha hoylech lishchait es pischai velomel es benoi shemetame lemeis mitzvah. I believe, Rav Nachum, that Rashi has answered your question, I think. Rashi has thrown in some words over here. Im einoi inyan leze, Tanehu inyan. Underline those words. What does that mean? Im einoi inyan lezer, tanehu inyan. This is a principle which I'm not sure if we've come across before, but it's a very, very important principle. As we know, every word in the Torah, there is nothing spare. And if there seems to be a spare word, it must be teaching us something. It's not for us, obviously, to extrapolate drashas. We leave that to Chazal HaKadoshim. Now, obviously, when there is a spare word in a parasha and we're going to make a drasha, obviously our preferred choice, our number one station will be, let's try and make a drasha which has relevance to the parasha that this word is to be found in. But on occasion, that's not possible. I've got a random word. It seems to be totally redundant. And there is nothing that I can learn from it that has relevance to the parasha which houses this word. So, as it were, for no other choice, what we will do is we will make a drasha from this word, albeit it doesn't relate to the context, but it'll have to relate to a different, unrelated parasha. Why? Because there cannot be a spare, redundant word. That's called im einoi inyan, tenehu inyan, quote unquote. Let's translate. Im einoi inyan, if it has no relevance, meaning over here, tenehu inyan, give it relevance for something else, even though it has nothing to do with the context. So remember, Rashi has just held our hands tight and told us, La'oviv is a nozir from Meis Mitzvah. Le'imoi, a nozir, Kohen who's a Meis Mitzvah. La'achiv, a nozir, once again, a nozir who's a Kohen Gadol for a Meis Mitzvah. What is the common denominator between those three drashas? They are all talking about a nozir, which is exactly the parasha where these words find themselves in. So what's la'achoyse? Rashi evokes the rule of im einoi inyan, tenehu inyan. If it has no relevance here, give it relevance elsewhere. And what's that elsewhere? Says Rashi, if you're on your way to doing a bris, on the way to doing Korban Pesach, you can stop and attend to a Meis Mitzvah. Reb Nachum, does that answer your question? Would you agree that it sounds like from Rashi that we have left the fold of Nozir?
Yes.
We are not now talking about a Nozir who's a Kohen Gadol, who's on the way to Pesach. That would have been perhaps the neatest progression. As we're going to see right now, Tosfos does say that. And it's a bit of a question why Rashi, L'chaira, is not learning that way. But it does seem to be, if Rashi calls it im einoi inyan, tenehu inyan, then l'chayre, if I understand correctly, I'm not 1,000% convinced, but if I understand correctly, then Rashi's telling you, it's true, we're not dealing with nausea anymore. But how can that be? The word l'achoysoi is written in the parasha of nausea. That's true. And I would love, therefore, to have made a drasha with relevance to nausea. But I can't because I've got nothing left. So im einoi inyan l'nozir, teneu inyan, for something else. It does sound like that's what we're talking about. Now let's immediately see Tosfos.
Can I ask one question? So like Korban Pesach, if you miss it, you lose it. But with Bris Milah, why can't it just say, okay, you're an ones, but you get to do it tomorrow. You don't lose out on Bris Milah.
Yeah, very good point. The Rambam says, very, very famous discussion at Machlokes, how to learn the Rambam. There's a mitzvah d'oraisa to do the Bris Milah on time. And the Rambam says, kol yoim sha'ovar yuchayev koris.
He's an ones.
True. But there is a chayav krisus. Korban Pesach is also an onus. We're dealing with the severity of the mitzvah. We're not talking about the pending punishment. You're not actually going to get the koros. It's not his fault. We're just dealing with a mitzvah which is so severe that it, in theory, holds koros. Each day that goes past, there's a chayav krisus. Now, there is a very big discussion now that you've raised the point. The Lashon of the Rambam is kol yoim v'yoim. One of the great Achronim, his name was the Dvar Avrohom, who lived in pre-war Europe, the great Goyim, he writes, and he says this is absolutely poshut as far as I'm concerned, that even though the Rambam writes kol yoim v'yoim, he says, but it's lav dafka. Obviously what it means is every minute, not just every day that passes, every minute, meaning, once you miss the eighth day and you're now on the ninth day, does it make a difference whether you do Bris Milah at 10 o'clock in the morning or 11 o'clock? So a simple reading of the Rambam might imply that it doesn't make a difference. He says each day that goes past, you're chayav koris. So I'll just ensure that the ninth day doesn't go past. Says the Dvar Avraham, that's not true. Every second that goes past is a chiyuv koris. And if you can do the bris at 10 o'clock, you should do it at 10 o'clock and not at 11 o'clock. This is, of course, very different to the child on the eighth day. The child on the eighth day, it doesn't make a difference, essentially, whether you do the bris at 10 o'clock in the morning or 11 o'clock in the morning. Besides for Zerizin Makdimin L'mitzvahs, which is a very nice inyan, but nobody's going to tell you that you've lost out anything if you do the bris at 11 o'clock or Koris or anything like that. Do you know what the big nafka minute of this is? The Dvar Avraham writes his world famous chiddush, which many, many achrayim disagree with. The Dvar Avraham writes the following phenomenal chiddush. Imagine, great quiz question. Imagine you have two babies in front of you. One of them is on day 8. And the other is on day 9. Which bris should the moel do first?
Clearly 9.
So I would have thought that obviously you should do the day 8 first. Why? Because that's the one that's bismanoi, says the Dvar Avraham, the exact opposite.
Right.
You should do the day 9 precisely because that's shaloi bismanoi, and every moment that goes past, you're over koris. Whereas the 8-day-old baby, so you'll do the bris in half an hour, nothing will happen. That is the world-famous chiddush of the Dvar Avraham. Why do I write it's world famous? It's very fascinating. He wrote this tshuva, as I mentioned, almost 100 years ago before the war. And he writes, you should be mefarsim this, publicize this, psak in my name, and this is the way that I paskin. Two babies, an 8-day-old and a 9-day-old, or 10-year-old makes no difference. You should do the one which is shaloi bismano, you should do that one first. The next five or six or seven or eight tshuvas, I don't remember, are all follow-up tshuvas from his first one, because, and you can see from his correspondence, many Gedolei Yisrael wrote to him disagreeing. So he wrote back tshuva after tshuva after tshuva after tshuva, defending his position. So clearly, as emphatically as he saw this issue, but it was highly controversial. Many Gedolei Yisrael disagreed, and they said it's not true. The bris bizmanoi should be done first. And that's why there's a whole bunch of follow-up tshuvas where there's a back-and-forth correspondence. But this, by the way, opens up a whole huge discussion. I know we've left our topic a little bit, but it's a very, very, very important discussion. On the classic bris scenario on a day 8, we said before, if you do the bris at 10 o'clock or you do the bris at 11 o'clock, doesn't make such a difference. And what about on day 9? Oh, the Dvar Avraham says it makes a huge difference. For an hour, you're going to be chayav karis. Now, this, for example, raises all types of halachic questions.
Could we relate this to a situation where, for example, you failed to daven sharechs, and so you have to do a tashlumen? So at mincha, you daven two shmona esreis. Which one do you do first? I believe you do the mincha first, and you do Correct. The tashlumen second.
Correct.
So if you follow that logic, then you would seem to say what the other gedolim were saying, that Right. you do the one bismano first.
Right. It could be compared to that, with the distinction also possible as well. But yes, that might well be a connection. Now, as I mentioned, this is extremely relevant. In a classic case, what's the earliest that you can perform bris milah? We know we do not do bris milah at night, only at day. So, Neitz HaChamo, you could do the bris. Now, let me ask you a private question. Have you ever been to a bris at 6 o'clock in the morning?
Not I. Uh-oh.